everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour here at George W. Pugh, sponsored by Wooden Mills Lewis and Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour, an editorial review, is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and editorial review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on home schools right after this. You know, once in a while we get a glimpse of the real world through the eyes of an insider like John Swinton, who made an observation one time and outraged his colleagues by saying that there's no such thing at this date of world's history in America as an independent press. You know it, and I know it, he said. And there's not one of you who dares to write your honest opinions, and if you did, you know beforehand that it would never appear in print. I'm paid weekly for keeping my honest opinions out of the paper that I'm connected with, and others of you are paid similar salaries for doing similar things. And any of you who would be so foolish as to write an honest opinion would be out on the streets looking for another job. If I allowed my honest opinions to appear in one issue of my paper before 24 hours, my occupation would be gone. The business of the journalist is to destroy the truth, to lie outright, to pervert, to vilify, and to fawn at the feet of mammon and to sell his country and his race for his daily bread. Now you know it and I know it. And what folly is this toasting an independent press? We are the tools and vassals of rich men behind the scenes. We are the jumping jacks. They pull the strings and we dance. Our talents, our possibilities, and our lives are all the property of other men. We are intellectual prostitutes. Now these rich men behind the scenes are the movers and shakers of the Global 2000 program, this New World Order. Men and families like the Windsors, the Rockefellers, Bushes, Bundys, Carnegies, and Vanderbilts. That's why I contend that it's time for us to wise up and start listening once more to the God of Abraham and stop following after all these crazy scientists, philosophers, preachers, and politicians. And let's prepare to live through and survive this New World Order and Global 2000 insanity. Now, if you'd like to learn more about Global 2000, a Bible prophecy in this New World Order, why don't you call and order my free 4-hour compact disc package? It's educational, it's entertaining, it's informative. Best of all, it's free of charge. You can call and order yours right now. The number to call, 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. If you're online, go to the website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Click on the email. Send an email request for that free general law CD package. Remember, georgegordon.org or call direct 417-273-4967. We've been talking about homeschool. Three ways to educate your child. Three ways. Public school, parochial school, homeschool. The choice is yours. You make that decision every time you bundle your kid off and send him off to school. The concept that you only have one choice, it's public school, take it or leave it, is not true. You may believe it, but it's not correct. And we've been looking at the public schools and the problems associated with public schools from noted educators that are in the public school system, and from PhDs and people of renown across the country that say they wouldn't send their kid to a public school. Public school is for the poor, the indigent, the ignorant, the people who don't know any better. You won't find Ted Kennedy or anybody else of any substance sending their children to public school. They send them to the best private schools. But in America today, a new twist, a new form of education started about 1980. It's actually not new. It's been going on since Moses came down off the mountain. It's called parental education. The duty in Anglo-Saxon administration is for parents to feed, to clothe, to house, and educate their children. The 10th plank of the Communist Manifesto is a foreign and alien ideology, calls for the free education of all children in public schools paid for by the public, paid for by the state. Hillary Clinton wrote a book called It Takes a Village. That's because she's a socialist and a communist. Of course it takes a village. It takes social lady and the state to raise your child. Now some of us have come to the conclusion that the state's educational program is not quite as good as we'd like to think it is. Now the United States has long been touted as a world leader. However, after significant declines in so many areas, one could properly question how much of a leader the United States actually is. Nonetheless, despite the repudiation and the separation of godly principles from public affairs, America has continued to be a world leader, but in all of the wrong categories. Since 1962, the United States has become number one in the world in the following categories. Categories like violent crime, we're number one. Divorce, we're number one. Teenage pregnancy rate, we're number one. Voluntary abortions, we're number one. Illegal drug use, we're number one. The illiteracy rate, America is the highest of any industrial nation in the world today. And documented cases of AIDS, we are number one. Now perhaps the best explanation for this reversal was given over 200 years ago during a time of frustration in the Constitutional Convention in 1787. You see, the state delegates attending that convention had fulfilled the proper requirements for office found in their own state constitutions. Now, one of the provisions found in virtually every state constitution written by our founding fathers, both before and after the adoption of the federal constitution, required the acknowledgement of a belief in future rewards and punishments. Let me repeat that in case it shocked you. One of the provisions found in virtually every state constitution in 1787, while our founding fathers were arguing over the new federal constitution, both before and after the adoption of this federal constitution, required the acknowledgement of a belief in future rewards and punishments. And every member, before he takes his seat, shall make and subscribe the following declaration. It says, I do believe in one God, the creator and governor of the universe, the rewarder to the good, and the punisher of the wicked, the constitutions of Pennsylvania and Vermont. You see, boys and girls, our founding fathers did not know, did not understand, did not practice, and did not comprehend the separation of church and state. They didn't know about that. That's a new, modern innovation. In 1787, the members who came from Pennsylvania and Vermont made this statement. They said, I do believe in one God, the creator and governor of the universe, the rewarder to the good and the punisher of the wicked. Those were taken right out of the constitutions of Pennsylvania and Vermont. The qualifications of electors shall be that he acknowledges the being of a God and believes in the future states of rewards and punishments, the Constitution of South Carolina. No person who denies the being of God or a future state of rewards and punishments shall hold any office in the civil department of this state, the Constitution of Tennessee. Yes, sir. These founding fathers, the guys that signed on to the Constitution of the United States, they did not understand separation of church and state. That was just so much balderdash and hogwash. Now, excerpts of a similar nature from the other states' constitutions demonstrate that the founders firmly believed in individual accountability to God and understanding that each individual must one day stand before God Almighty and give an accounting for his actions, which would then result in rewards or punishments. However, their discussions during the Constitutional Convention indicate that they not only understood personal accountability, they also understood national accountability to God. An individual's final reckoning with God will occur after departure from this life. And it may occur immediately after death or 10,000 years after death, but it will occur. A final, future, inevitable, absolute reckoning is inevitable. However, a nation, unlike an individual, is not eternal. And when a nation is gone, it is forever gone. And since a nation cannot account to God in the future, when does it account to God? The answer to that question was clearly articulated by Delegate George Mason on the floor of the Constitutional Convention and is possibly the most significant explanation of what happened to this nation after 1962. He said, as nations cannot be rewarded or punished in the next world, so they must be in this. By an inevitable chain of causes and effects, Providence punishes national sins by national calamities. Unquote. George Mason. Now, nations make their accounting to God in the present, right now, today. And the Bible is filled with accounts of how the stand taken by a nation's leaders can cause immediate crisis for that nation, sometimes destruction. Now, consider the story of Elijah's conflict with the prophets of Baal on Mount Carmel that we read about in 1 Kings chapter 18. Following his victory and the complete vindication of God, Elijah retreated to Mount Horeb, where he complained to God that he was the only righteous man left in the nation. And God promptly informed him that, no, he was not the only righteous man in the nation, that God had reserved 7,000 men in the nation who had never bowed their knee to Baal. And still 7,000 righteous men of integrity who had not compromised. Well, I'll just bet you that today in America there's 7,000 men, maybe even two or three women, that have not bowed their knee to Baal. And yet these 7,000 righteous men, just like every other individual in the nation, had just been through a 3.5-year famine brought on the nation because of the wicked stands taken by Ahab and Jezebel, the nation's top leaders. And God dealt with the entire nation based on the actions of its leaders. Now, a second example of national accountability is seen when King David numbered the troops. You'll see that in 1 Chronicles chapter 21. David's census, or numbering of the troops, was an act of gloating in his own strength and military accomplishments. It was an act based on his assumption that the size of his army was responsible for his many victories. However, the reason for David's many victories had been God's direct assistance in those battles. Horses are prepared against the day of battle, but victory comes from the Eternal, as we see in Proverbs 21, verse 31. Victory comes from God. But somehow, old King David had forgotten who had brought him to his position of prominence. And a similar situation was developing in America in 1787 until Benjamin Franklin, old Ben Franklin, rose on the floor of the Constitutional Convention, and he reminded all of the delegates who had been arguing and fighting with one another over the debates. He said that in the situation of this assembly, groping as it were in the dark to find political truth and scarce able to distinguish it when presented to us, how has it happened, sir, that we have not hitherto once thought of humbly applying to the Father of Lights to illuminate our understanding. Now, in the beginning of the contest with Great Britain, when we were sensible of danger, we had daily prayer in this room, gentlemen, daily prayer for the divine protection from God. Our prayers, sir, were heard, and our prayers were graciously answered. And all of us who were engaged in that struggle must have observed frequent instances of a superintending providence in our favor. And have we now forgotten this powerful friend? Or do we imagine that we no longer need his assistance? Well, I have lived, sir, a long time, and the longer I live, the more convincing proofs I see of this truth, that God governs in the affairs of men. And if a sparrow cannot fall to the ground without his notice, is it probable that an empire can rise without his aid? Now, we have been assured, sir, in the sacred writings that except the Lord build the house, they labor in vain that build it. And I firmly believe this. And I also believe that without his concurring aid, we shall succeed in this political building no better than the builders of Babel. I therefore beg leave to move that henceforth prayers imploring the assistance of heaven and of heaven's blessings on our deliberations be held in this assembly every morning before we proceed to business. Unquote. That was Benjamin Franklin. Following Franklin's rebuke, the delegates entered a 3-day recess and completely refocused their attention and rededicated their minds to the eternal, the Lord God of Abraham. And for 3 days, they fasted and they prayed and they invited ministers from across the city to address them and to pray for them. However, the delegates' response to Franklin's rebuke was quite different from the response of King David when General Joab discouraged him from numbering his troops in 1 Chronicles 21, verse 3. David totally ignored Joab's advice and ordered the count to be made. Consequently, as a result of David's stand, which excluded any acknowledgement of God or of his hand, a plague befell the nation. As we read in 1 Chronicles 21, verse 14, the stand of the nation's leaders had again affected the entire nation. Now, not only did George Mason and Benjamin Franklin express their understanding of this truth, but Thomas Jefferson, when discussing the wrongs of slavery and slave ownership, made a statement so important and so respected that it is engraved inside the Jefferson Memorial in Washington, D.C. It says, "Indeed, I tremble for my country when I reflect that God is just and that his justice cannot sleep forever." President Lincoln, as our nation's leader, understood the concept of national accountability to God. And once on overhearing a clergyman say that he hoped the Lord was on our side, Lincoln replied, "I'm not at all concerned about that, for I know that the Lord is always on the side of the right. But it is my constant anxiety and my constant prayer that I and this nation should be on the Lord's side." Now, it is vital that a nation's leaders take stands which cause God to remain an ally and not an enemy. Is it simply coincidence that each of the categories presented began to deteriorate visibly and dramatically immediately after the nation's leaders repudiated God and his principles? Or can it be that the principle of national accountability is at work today in 2005? The simple acknowledgement of God has provided us with more blessings and more prosperity than any of us could possibly suppose. The Bible clearly records God's promise, "Whoever honors me, I will honor. And whosoever disregards me, I will disregard." He said that in 1 Samuel 2, verse 30. Now, when we were honoring God in our public affairs in the United States of America, we were elevated among the nations of the world in achievement, morality, productivity, stability, and reputation. We became the number one industrial, military, and economic power in the world. Now, since we gave our God the finger and we have disregarded him, we are no longer in that superior position as a nation. And our performances have lapsed into mediocrity when compared with other nations. The United States is still number one in the world. But now we're number one in all of the wrong areas, and we are now hated and despised for it. In Psalm 91, verses 14 through 16, it chronicles what has happened to this nation when it was openly and acknowledging God prior to 1962. In these verses, God made this declaration. He said, "I will protect him, for he acknowledges my name. He will call upon me, and I will answer him. I will be with him in trouble. I will deliver him and honor him. With long life will I satisfy him and show him my salvation." Now, notice the benefits of acknowledging God. Benefits that we were enjoying before 1962. "I will answer him." Statistics on students, families, schools, and the nation demonstrated extraordinary stability. "I will protect him." The remarkably low rates of crime, abuse, pregnancies, and sexually transmitted diseases. Evidence that we definitely were under divine protection and under and benefiting from divine blessing. I will be with him in trouble. We experienced declining divorce rates and fewer family breakups. With long life will I satisfy him. Suicide rates were low among students. I will honor him. We enjoyed a lofty international reputation, but have now become a nation embarrassed by our educational system, our public corruption, our illiteracy, our immorality, our child abuse, and our illegal drug use. Jeremiah 8 elucidates the problems which occur when a nation rejects God, as we Americans have rejected our God, and has been done by our courts in 1962. Since they have rejected the word of the Lord, what kind of wisdom do they have? Therefore, I will give their wives to other men and their fields to new owners. They dress the wound of my people as though it were not serious, saying, peace, peace, when there is no peace. They have no shame at all. They do not even know how to blush. So they will fall among the fallen. I will take away their harvest. There will be no figs on the tree, and their leaves will wither. What I have given them, I will take away. Now I want you to notice the accuracy of those verses. Since they have rejected the word of the Eternal, what kind of wisdom do they have? Well, our academic achievements have plummeted in both domestic and international testing. Therefore, I will give their wives to other men. Adultery has now risen 3 to 4 times its previous level. And their fields to new owners. Defaults on payments and repossession of property has skyrocketed. There were 595,000 bankruptcies in 1988. Today, the numbers are 2.3 million per year. They dress the wound of my people as though it were not serious, saying, peace, peace, when there is no peace. Our nation downplays the enormity of its problems and attempts to treat superficially the symptoms of serious problems such as illiteracy and poor academic achievement and sexually transmitted diseases like AIDS, gonorrhea, and syphilis. And while ignoring their root causes, they have no shame at all. They do not even know how to blush, God says. Morality is a word with new parameters. Things previously done only in secret, never discussed, are now done openly, with little or no embarrassment. It's called coming out of the closet. We now extol sodomy and homosexuality. Now, when speaking of gay clothing or a gay party, one no longer means jolly and happy, but it describes an entire subculture based on immorality and filth and perversion. And so they will fall among the fallen. Our international position in education, industry, morality, and family stability have fallen to the worst levels of any industrial nation in the world. God said, I will take away their harvest. There will be no figs on the tree, and their leaves will wither. And our productivity has dropped almost 80% from its pre-1962 levels. What I have given them, I will take away from them. Major reversals have occurred in most areas since God and the principles that God gave us at Mount Sinai have now been barred from public affairs. America today is nearing the point where we are a net food importer. We used to be the world's number one breadbasket. We were the world's number one exporter of food. Not any longer. When contemplating his statements by the nation's leaders, God asked a very probing question in Jeremiah chapter 7. He said, am I the one that they are provoking? Are they not rather harming themselves to their own shame? Now, the prohibition on Christian principles in public affairs did nothing to harm God. It obviously has scandalized the entire nation. The words of Franklin's rebuke to the Constitutional Convention again come to mind. Have we now forgotten this powerful friend, Franklin intoned? Or do we imagine that we no longer need his assistance? Franklin asked. Without his concurring aid, we shall succeed no better than the builders of Babel. We shall be divided by our little party local interests, our projects will be confounded, and we ourselves shall become a reproach and a byword down to future ages, said Ben Franklin. Now, the practice of public prayer and of seeking God's concurring aid was integral in this nation's birth, growth, and development and maturing. We were born and guided through our adolescence and then brought through turmoil and onto stability by men of prayer, by men of religious principle, by men who believed in God and believed what God said. Now, can we possibly believe that what has been gained by prayer and religious principle can be maintained today without them? To deny students the access to those same Christian principles which made our nation great is to deny to them the opportunity to participate in our national heritage. And we should all recall George Washington's question. Who, that is, a sincere friend to America can look with indifference upon attempts to shake the foundation of this nation's fabric? So as proven by the graphs and statistics, prayer in schools and the acknowledgement of God in public affairs is not simply a religious issue. It is a national issue. Obtaining God's aid and favor by simply acknowledging Him in public is an asset not to be underestimated. We can ill afford to attempt to continue without His aid and without His favor. Hosea 6, verse 3 again needs to become the description of our national policy. Let us press on to acknowledge Him, said Hosea in Hosea 6, verse 3. Again, let me point out that our founding fathers didn't seem to understand the separation of church and state. They willingly and openly acknowledged God, prayed to God, and required that prayer and that acknowledgement of God in our public affairs. And when we did, we became the wealthiest, most powerful, prosperous, productive, military, economic, and industrial power in the world. And then one day we woke up and said, we've had enough of this and we're not going to do it anymore. It's a cause and effect relationship. It's a choice that we made. There are still 7,000 righteous men and women in America who have not bowed their knee to Baal, maybe even more. Hell, there may be as many as 144,000. Maybe you ought to be thinking about whether or not you're one of them. At some point in time, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob is going to go ballistic. He went ballistic on the Egyptians in the Red Sea, and he killed 450,000 of them in about 20 minutes in one afternoon. In the pre-flood world, God went ballistic. He flew off the handle. He bounced off the walls. And He killed every man, woman, and child, every dog, cat, and pig, every chicken, every crow, every worm on planet Earth, except for those of Noah's family and those that were in the ark. You know, there are times when we ought to sit back and ask ourselves, do you really think that giving the God of Abraham the finger is really the wisest course for us to take? Now, if you're thinking that maybe we ought to reconsider this, let me suggest to you America to Pray or Not to Pray. It's written by David Burton. That was chapter 7. Thought I'd share it with you. Because David Burton, too, is concerned about what goes on in the public schools. Concerned about the educational drift, the stance that Americans have taken by giving our God the finger. Whether you agree with his religious ideology or not, you can't deny that when we practiced prayer in our public lives and acknowledging of God, we were doing a hell of a lot better than we're doing today. You can get a copy of this book. It's America to Pray or Not to Pray, David Burton. Why don't you get on the web and see if you can find Wall Builder Press. You probably can. Go to Google and Wall Builder Press, Post Office Box 397, Aledo, Texas, 76008. Wall Builder Press, P.O. Box 397, Aledo, Texas, A-L-E-D-O, Aledo, Texas, 76008. The telephone number is 817-441-6044. Try it again. 817-441-6044. Last time I bought a copy, it was about $12. If it was five times that, it would be cheap. Dynamite book, America to Pray or Not to Pray, David Burton. While you're at it, be sure to ask for their catalog. They publish a number of books and tapes, both video and audio. I think you'll be glad you did. You can use a lot of that in your own home school. And I think Burton is probably, well, if he's not number one, he's, you know, two or three of historical commentators on American history. I saw two or three of his tapes in explaining the history of America and the founding of America from the perspective of the Bible. I know he's a wild, crazy, right-wing, lunatic fanatic, but why don't you give him a listen? I think you'll enjoy it. All right, we're at the halfway point. I've got to give you a couple of reminders here. You're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. And The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week in the United States, worldwide, over the Internet. For more information about the Gordon Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website. It's georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that's open to individuals by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact disc, and The Law Hour website is updated weekly and has a radio log, schedule, and archive. It can be accessed through the website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide on the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest, and The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, news, and current events 7 days a week. Remember, the Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, please call the Law School at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. The Law Hour, an editorial review, gives credit to the authors and publications that we use on this program. And we often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements or recommendations that we give do not mean that the authors or publications so endorsed or recommended will reciprocate. And most of the authors and publications cited on the Law Hour are political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint is not necessarily endorsed by the Law Hour, nor do these institutions or publications necessarily recommend or endorse the Law Hour and editorial review. Now, the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program and mine alone, they don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, sponsors, management, or staff of this network or local radio station. For more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website, georgegordon.org, or call the Law School Direct at 417-273-4967. Once more, that's the Law Hour and editorial review. Georgegordon.org is the website, or you can call the Law School Direct, 417-273-4967. When we review the public school system and we compare that system to the parental education system that we used from about 3100 BC until approximately just round numbers, around 1900, we Anglo-Saxons have been in captivity and out of captivity many, many times, but we have always maintained the concept of responsibility. Responsibility. We have a duty. We have a responsibility to educate our children. Americans today have totally abdicated that responsibility. I mean totally. We want a babysitting service to take care of our children for us, and we don't care what kind of tripe our children are exposed to or educated to as long as we get that free babysitting service. That's a mistake. It's a mistake because the public school system is the 10th plank to the Communist Manifesto. That's a foreign and alien ideology. It's a foreign and alien ideology that is totally opposed to the scriptures, totally opposed to God and the law of God. The public school system costs us twice as much as private school, and it costs us 10 times more than homeschool. It is anything but free public education. It is the most expensive system of self-destruction ever conceived by the mind of man, and we seem to pay it and love it. And when our leaders tell us that the solution to the public school debacle is to spend more money, we can't get in our pockets fast enough to shell out more money for this public school morass. We wouldn't think of tithing to God, but boy, we can't pay for public school. We can't pay enough, and we can't pay it fast enough. We love it. Now, our public school teaches our sons sodomy, teaches our daughters whoredom, and it does it in a perfect socialist environment. And we Americans love it because we have 47 million children in the public school system, only about 3 million in homeschools and about 6 million in parochial schools. So that's about 9 million to 47. What's the numbers there? 6 divided by 47. Well, it represents about 13%. It's a good start. 13% of us, about a tithe, 10% of us, don't believe in and have now rejected public school. That's a good start. But the 90% who have adopted this free public education, 10th plank to the Communist Manifesto, have also adopted the other 9 planks. It's the 90% of our fellow brethren, our fellow Americans, that are leading the nation into its death throes and total destruction. Now, there are 6 things that the Eternal does hate, yea, 7 are an abomination unto him. We read this in Proverbs 6, verses 16 through 19. God tells us he hates a proud look. Have you looked at these pimply-faced punks in the shopping malls and at the DX station with their proud looks and with all of their earrings protruding from their eyebrows, tongues, navels, and everywhere except their ears, except the boys who have now poked holes in their ears? A lying tongue. God says he hates a lying tongue. That reminds me of evolutionary philosophy and communism and socialism being taught in these public schools. Hands that shed innocent blood, which reminded me of David Barton's page 68. Remember, what are the 17 most common problems in public school? It starts with rape, number 1, robbery, assault, burglary, arson, bombings, murder, suicide, absenteeism, vandalism, extortion, drug abuse, alcohol abuse, gang warfare, pregnancies, abortions, and venereal disease. Hands that shed innocent blood. They learn it in public school. Number 4, a heart that devises wicked imaginations. Have you noticed the school shootings and the students whose hearts devise wicked imaginations? Feet, number 5, that be swift in running to mischief. Teaching the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto, what greater mischief than to throw our God out and replace him with this foreign and alien pagan ideology? Number 6, a false witness that speaks lies. Teachers that come into the classrooms and teach lies. Number 7, and he that sows discord among brethren. Well, public school teaches and promotes all 7 of these abominations that God says he hates. You'll see that in Proverbs 6, verses 16 through 19. And public school is a place of rape, robbery, burglary, arson, bombings, murder, vandalism, extortion, drug abuse, witchcraft, fornication, and venereal disease. It's a cesspool of filth. Public school has totally expunged God, prayer, the 10 commandments, and morality from the educational system. It doesn't exist in public school. Public schools hire incompetent teachers with diplomas and credentials who cannot teach Johnny to read, sodomites to teach Johnny an alternative lifestyle as a matter of public policy, and then graduates more than a million functional illiterates every year who cannot read their own diplomas. Public school teaches that premarital sexual activity is good for adolescents, furnishes condoms to these same students, and then encourages sexual relations among and between children, and then provides abortion services for pregnant girls. All of this is done at public expense and without any notice whatsoever required to parents. No notice at all. Public school teaches fairy tales called evolution in place of creation, communism in place of our Constitution, and socialism in place of our Bill of Rights, property, and property rights. These public schools teach crime in the violation of the scriptures by teaching us to practice the census, the draft, vaccinations, public school, income tax, social security, insurance, and usury in the form of home mortgages, credit cards, checking accounts, bank loans, consumer credit, and auto loans. These eight criminal activities violate 65 statutes of the Mosaic Law and 5 of the Ten Commandments, and we learn all of that and more from our public schools. Now, if a foreign nation committed these acts or any of these acts against our children, we would go to war. If Coca-Cola, PepsiCo, or Pizza Hut did any of these abominations against any child, we would scream for the police. We would scream. We would demand laws, legislation, and protection. But as an institution derived from communism, built upon evil, creating ignorance and promoting crime, it is second to none in holy veneration in the hearts and the minds of the vast majority of Americans today. But let us all ask, why? Why would we want to pay 10 times more and receive 50% less of all of this wickedness, all of this evil, all of this filth and perversion? Why? How does that benefit? How does that profit us individually or as a nation? Now, these public schools cost 10 times as much as homeschool. These public schools have totally expunged God from the classroom. They have totally expunged prayer from the classroom. These public schools have totally expunged morality from the classroom. The public schools have taken the commandments from the classroom, the Ten Commandments, expunged. These public schools have removed premarital sexual abstinence from the classroom. They teach premarital sex is good for adolescents. The public schools furnish condoms for students in the public schools. They furnish abortions for pregnant students. The public school encourages sexual relations among adolescents. The public schools employ pedophiles and sodomites as teachers. The public schools teach evolution in place of special creation. They teach communism in place of our Constitution. They teach socialism in place of our Bill of Rights. And it costs twice as much as private school just to carry out shooting drills twice a year in Oakland, California. Shooting drills in the public schools. In the public schools, remember, the number one problem is rape. Number two is robbery. Number three is followed by burglary, arson, bombings, murder, suicide, absenteeism, vandalism, extortion, drug abuse, alcohol abuse, gang warfare, premarital pregnancy, abortions, and venereal disease. Surveys and statistics show that 40% of the students fear for their safety in public school. Surveys and statistics show that 30% of the students have carried weapons to school at one time or another. Surveys and statistics show that 40% of the students have been the victims of robbery, assault, or larceny in your local public school. Surveys and statistics show that 50% of the teachers have been victims of robbery, assault, or larceny at the public school. Public school is the scene of 5,200 high school teachers who are physically attacked every month, with 20% requiring medical attention. Did you get that? 5,200 high school teachers. 5,200 high school teachers are physically attacked every month in the public schools. Public school has abolished absolutes and has abolished the fixed rights and wrongs of the Bible. The public schools have altered every aspect of morality, every aspect of behavior, and every aspect of achievement. Achievement test scores in public schools have been declining since 1963, while private school achievement scores have been increasing since 1963. The public schools graduate more than a million functional illiterates every year. The public schools, 25% of the students, cannot identify the country that borders the United States on the south. Let me repeat that. In the public schools of the United States of America, 25% of the students cannot identify the country that borders the United States on the south, 25% don't know that Mexico is the nation that borders America on the south. In the public schools, 39% of the students cannot name the six New England states. That's nearly 40% of the students cannot name the six New England states. Now, that's here in America. In public school, 45% of those tested could not respond to this instruction correctly on the attached map, shade in the area where the United States is located. Let me describe it. They show you a map of the world, and they say to the students, you take a color crayon and you shade in that area of the map where the United States of America is located, and 45% of the students tested, that's nearly half of all of the students in the United States of America, couldn't find the United States of America on a world map with both hands and a road map. In public schools, when asked to identify the two largest states in the union, 50% of American school-age students could not do it. They didn't know the two largest states. In public school, 80% of the students can't name the two smallest states in the union, Delaware and Rhode Island, the two biggest states, Alaska and California, or Alaska and Texas, excuse me, used to be California and Texas. But why don't students know anything about geography, history? Why is it that a million students graduate from the public schools and they're illiterate? Why would you want to send your child to a public school with the record that I'm outlining for you right here? Why in God's green earth would you want to send your child to a place that's that filthy and perverted? You'd have to hate somebody with a passion that is indescribable in human terms to subject somebody. I wouldn't send my worst enemy to a place like that. Well, get this. In public school, 50% of the students could not place World War One between 1900 and 1950. That is World War One, between 1900 and 1950. 50% of students. I mean, it isn't that they didn't know that World War One occurred from August of 1914 until November of 1918. It's that they couldn't place it in all of the history of the world between 1900 and 1950. It might be 1865 or 1972 or 1651, but they didn't know World War One occurred between 1900 and 1950. That's 50% of students, 50%. In public school, 67% of the students do not know when the Civil War took place. Two-thirds of America's students do not know when the Civil War took place. They can't place it between 1700 and 2300. They haven't got a clue. They don't know. Now, what are these children spending their time doing? What are these children learning in public school? In public school, 75% of the students are unable to say within 20 years when Abraham Lincoln was president. In public school, 20% of the students could not identify George Washington as the commander of the colonial forces during the Revolutionary War. In public school, 33% of the students do not know that Lincoln was the author of the Emancipation Proclamation. That's a third. A third don't know who wrote the Emancipation Proclamation. In public school, 50% of the students failed to recognize Patrick Henry as the man who said, "Give me liberty or give me death." In public school, 33% do not know that the Declaration of Independence signaled the American colonists' break with England. In public school, 50% of the students could not say even approximately when the Constitution was written. To say that the public schools employ incompetent teachers is an understatement of monumental proportions. Surely, teachers, if they were competent, would accidentally inform their students, would just naturally and normally put in some information concerning the geography of the United States, would they not? Or the history, or the statements of our forefathers? I'll bet you that more American children know the words, "Make my day," and "who said it," than know Patrick Henry said, "Give me liberty or give me death." And why is that? Now, the public school is not something to brag about, and it's not something to be proud of. It's something that we should all be ashamed of. If you've got a child in public school, and if you're moved at all by the report that I'm giving you, you should start thinking about, what on earth have I done to my child, and how can I extricate my child from that morass of filth and perversion? I often wonder what God Almighty is going to say to you parents in the judgment. More importantly, what are you going to say to God Almighty when He asks you, why did you send your child to that public school? Did you know? You know, you'd have to be pleading total ignorance to get away with that. Is there anybody in America that is this ignorant that we don't know what's going on in these public schools? Why would we countenance such a thing going on? And if we knew about it, why wouldn't we get up and do something about it? Now, the first thing that you can do is to stop spreading it. You know, if you've got a disease, the first obligation is to quarantine yourself and make sure that you don't give this to anybody else. If you've got children and you're thinking about education, the first thing you should do is protect them from the public school system. If you don't know how to homeschool, why don't you learn how? You can't possibly be as bad. I don't care what your background is or how ignorant you are. You can't possibly be as bad as the public school. And the public schools aren't doing this to your children accidentally. It's being done with a concerted, directed policy. The dumbing down of your children, the perversion of your children, the filth, the drugs, the sex, the violence that they're subjected to in public school is national public policy. It's done intentionally and directly for the express purpose of destroying the nation and melding it into the New World Order. That's the purpose. That's what's happening. Now, you're not going to straighten out your public school, nor should you even try. Why waste your time? Why don't you do the logical thing and stop aiding and abetting your enemies in your own destruction? Take your children out of the public school and start educating them at home. It's your duty. It's your responsibility. And if you'd like to learn how to do that, call the law school and let's talk about it. Let us share with you some of the processes that we have gone through here. We've got school-age children, or had them. And we've educated our children. If we can do it, you can do it. If 3 million Americans can do it, you can do it. I'm out of time. We're going to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station. Let me remind you that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, The Law Hour, an editorial review, brings you important information about law news and current events 7 days a week. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order your CD package, just call direct 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, news, and current events 7 days a week. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Well, time's up. I got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, good night, friends.